Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind. I'm Brian McKellen. Do you want to learn how to keep yourself safe from criminals, vandalism, or those that will cause you bodily harm? Do you want to know how to take care of yourself or summon care in case of an emergency? Talking with us about the best safety tips for the blind is Tracy Hawkins. Known as Tracy the Safety Lady, Ms. Hawkins speaks to groups about the best safety and security techniques based on real-life training. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
So let's first talk about you and your business. How did you become a speaker on the subject of safety and security for the blind?
Well, actually, I've been in business about 18 years, and I was looking for a business to start, and I wanted to do something that no one else was doing, and something that there was a real need for. I wanted to serve my community. And it just so happens that my husband happens to be blind. So that kind of worked well. As far as my business, I was able to find products that were accessible, and they were not special products, but they were everyday safety items. And I was able to explain to people, I guess that's the key there, is taking the time to explain to people, whether they're sighted or not, how to actually utilize the products. So it's not that the products are any different than others, but I explain in a way where people who are blind or visually challenged, where they can understand how to utilize them.
And we're going to talk more about those products in a second. Forgive us, folks. Tracy's at a special event, so there's going to be a lot of background noise in this interview. Okay. But you give several presentations to several target audiences, including various groups. What are some of the target audiences that typically you give presentations to, and where do you give them?
Okay, I have been a real estate agent, so I developed a safety program specifically for real estate agents. As you can imagine, that's a pretty dangerous job. The Department of Labor ranks that as a high-risk occupation. And so having some insight, I was able to create a program based on my knowledge and my actual experience to help real estate agents learn how to work in a safer manner and realistically since I've been there. And along the same lines, I was required to present a program for home health workers because their jobs are almost as dangerous as real estate agents. They make a living meeting people, strangers, in houses. So I developed a safety program specifically for home health and field workers. I have a program for college students. I have a general safety program, and I typically can customize my program to whoever my audience is. So that's one of the ways that I've been able to speak to members of the audience who happen to have a visual challenge. I know exactly how to speak in a descriptive enough way where it helps them understand what I'm talking about and helps them live a safe lifestyle, especially my first-hand experience with my husband. And he can tell me, you know, if I'm saying something that, you know, that might be considered, I guess, not rude, but he keeps me on track. Let's put it like that.
Let's talk more about safety and security precautions for the blind. You gave several presentations, you and others did, at the ACB convention in Reno, Nevada in 2011 on safety and security. Mm-hmm. One of the other speakers, Wendy David, who worked for the VA in Seattle, said that the blind are more vulnerable to becoming victims of crime. Why do you think this is the case?
Well, that could be true in a couple of ways. First and foremost, criminals are predators, and they look for who is perceived to be the weakest. So that could be someone with a so-called disability. It could be someone who is older. It could be someone younger. So children, the elderly, and people with so-called disabilities could also be targeted. So the solution is the same for all. Awareness, just being aware of your surroundings, and that works even if you are visually challenged. And I got an opportunity to hear a lot of people who say, you know, I'm very in tune to what's going on around me. You know, I can sense when something is wrong. That leads me to my next point. We all have a built-in survival mechanism, also called gut instinct, also called intuition, that is hardly ever wrong. Regardless of any so-called disabilities or any your age, whatever the situation, whatever the circumstance. If you get a gut feeling that something's wrong. You get that tightness in your stomach. If your heart starts to beat fast, if the hairs are standing up on the back of your neck or on your arms, listen to that voice. Listen to your body because it's telling you there's a dangerous situation. You don't need sight to know that. Your senses are all alert. Young people, older people, all of us have that built-in survival mechanism. All animals and nature do. But humans are the only animal who refuse to listen to it. In the interest of being polite, we don't want to hurt someone's feelings. We don't want to appear to be rude. We ignore that voice. We ignore that warning, that signal. So what I'm saying is regardless of your station in life or your ability level, if you listen to that voice, if you listen to your gut, you can be in a situation where you can avoid being victimized. Same thing again about the awareness. You don't have to see to be aware. I've heard several people, and my husband as well, say that, you know, I can sense when something's wrong. I can, you know, if something doesn't sound quite right, you get a feeling that something's wrong. So you can certainly listen to your body first and foremost. And also, one thing that I also stress, Brian, is that people need to have a safety plan. So again, regardless of your ability level, if you know what you're going to do in any given situation, you can come through that situation. That means knowing in advance what you will do in any given situation. So I call it play the what-if game. You need to think, what if on my way home from the bus stop this evening, if someone's following me, what am I going to do? And I encourage people, don't wait till you're in that circumstance or in the moment to try to determine what you're going to do. Your safety plan should be thought out in advance. So what if when I leave work tonight and I'm walking to the bus stop, I hear someone following me, what am I going to do? So at that point, you know that you're going to turn around and confront the person. And confront meaning say, hi, you know, how are you doing today? That means you're going to pretend to be on a phone call, describing where you're located. When I say pretend, that means you're not really talking to someone, but you're giving the impression that you're talking to someone, so that that person, so you're paying complete attention to what's going on around you. You're not distracted by another voice on the phone, and you can be giving directions to where you're located. And if someone is targeting you, they'll hear you talking, they'll hear you giving directions, but they know, no, this is not going to work because someone's on the way. This person is alert and aware. And another thing is, another way to create a witness is to have a real witness actually be on a real phone call. If you have a partner or someone who can talk on the phone while you go through a dangerous area or a situation that may be dangerous, that's great. You know, talk to them, let them know where you are, let them know what's going on around you. If something seems uncomfortable, you can say, hey, John, you know, I hear someone following me. You know, the feet, the footprints, they sound kind of heavy. The footsteps sound heavy. It may be a man. I'm walking in this direction on this side of the street. Be very detailed. So you also have the opportunity of telling people, you know, telling your witnesses exactly what's going on.
And I'm sure the safety plan would include, say you're in emergency situations where the fire department is called or the paramedics. Could those medical or fire situations also be included in that safety plan?
Yes, and a lot of times, a lot of communities have a way for you to alert the fire department or the police department when you first move in to let them know that someone, you know, of a different ability is living in the house. So you can let them know that, you know, someone who can't hear or someone who can't see or someone who's in a wheelchair, whatever the circumstance may be, you can let them know, register with them in advance. And as you said, part of the safety plan, so it's done in advance, not, you know, waiting until the last moment, but in advance. So that way, if they get a call to that location, they know immediately that they're going to have to take special measures to make sure to get that person out and to locate that person. And there are also those window stickers which let you know that there's a person in the house. Now, there are two schools of thought there. One is a window sticker which says, you know, handicapped person here. You know, it's like a people finder, and it's for the fire department or first responders. And then they also have one that, you know, there's a kid here. And you're supposed to put those in the window of the person who has a disability or in the window of a kid, but and that will alert emergency personnel that this person, you know, is in this room, more than likely needs to be rescued. The other school of thought goes to the criminal mind, that criminals will see that sticker saying there's a child in this room, and if it's a predator or a pedophile or something along those lines, that it alerts them, hey, here's where I can find a child in the house. Or if it says here's a disabled person, then they'll say, well, I'll target that person. So there's two schools of thoughts there, but your point is excellent, Brian. If you register with the police and the fire department in advance, you don't need those kind of that decal or advance warning. So you can certainly work around that.
Now let's talk about some of the other tips to keep the blind safe.
Okay.
One tip you talked about at the ACB convention during your presentation was a security evaluation. How does that evaluation work? And what are the benefits of having this done?
Okay, every community's crime prevention police department will do a free security assessment. And a lot of people don't realize that, but that's what your tax dollars are working for. So you call the crime prevention officer and ask who can do a security assessment, and they will come and do an evaluation of your house. They can tell you basically how to make your house burglar-proof. So they can certainly come in with their checklist, tell you about lighting, tell you about shrubbery. They'll talk about locks. So they'll tell you how to make your house burglar-proof. So that's definitely something that everyone should do. And it's a lot of people do not know about that. So it's certainly something that should be done.
What are some other tips that you suggest for the blind and visually impaired to just keep themselves safe at home, even when they're out in public?
Once again, you need to learn about the products that are on the market. You need to educate yourself what's out there, how do the items work, and making sure you know how to use them. So definitely educating yourself is first and foremost. There are so many products out there, and again, they don't have to be special, accessible products. They're just regular products that have an accessibility function. You have an accessibility with education that you can learn how to use. So, probably one of my most popular products is a doorstop alarm. And those are devices that go, it's a wedge, and it goes under the door, and it allows you to keep the door from opening. It's a real doorstop. So if someone tries to open the door, it's not going to open. And if they push it hard enough, it never is going to activate the alarm. So if you hear it, you know someone's trying to get in, but you know that they can't get in. So that's probably one of the easiest and most popular devices. It works well not only for homes, but for hotels, apartments, dormitories, almost anywhere that you are. If you're concerned with someone getting in while you're inside, that is the key. Another item is the magnetic contact alarm. Now, those are simple and easy, and dare I say, they're cheap. And those are the little pill and stick two-part alarms. And a lot of people who are familiar with the alarm systems, monitored alarm systems, know that they, the little bitty alarm, I say about an inch by 2 inches, and they go on, one part goes on the door, the window, or the sliding glass door, and the other part goes on the frame. So the alarm is turned off when you're coming and going, or you're opening and closing the window. But in order to set the alarm, you turn it on. At that point, if anyone opens that door or window, the alarm is going to sound. So that alerts you that a specific door or window has been opened. And any would-be criminal, they're cowards. They don't want witnesses. So as soon as they hear the alarm, they don't know if it's monitored or not. They typically don't stick around to find out. The noise is enough to scare them away. And I'm trying to think, doors and windows, those are probably the two biggest areas in a home when talking about safety or security.
Speaking of all of these devices, I saw you in several news interviews on YouTube, including that on the Fox television station in Kansas City. You were talking about several weapons or tools in one of the interviews there. Why don't you talk about what those weapons or tools are and how the blind can use them?
Some of the personal safety tools that I talk about are the key ring alarms. And once again, criminals don't like witnesses. So the key ring alarm is a noisemaker, basically. It's small enough, about the size of a car remote, goes on the key ring. So when you're out and about, whether you are on a bus stop or just walking out and about, you push that alarm, it makes noise, it gets attention. And criminals do not want witnesses, so it definitely makes them think twice before they bother you. And that's probably one of the most ideal product for the visually challenged is having a way to call for help and getting attention. So I always say, don't expect anyone to run to your rescue, but people will turn around to see what's going on, and that's exactly what criminals don't want. They do not want witnesses. So that's ideal. And the other item, and sometimes there are different schools of thought, would be pepper spray. And I've heard others say, and it offends me, honestly, that blind people have no business carrying pepper spray. And as my husband says, how dare you tell me what I can carry? So I tend to agree with him that anyone, and that means anyone of any age who needs a weapon and needs a way to defend themselves, pepper spray is an option if you know how to use it. If you work with it, if you practice it, and you know in advance how to use it, definitely is the best, it's a good choice. And that's the choice that I utilize because it physically stops someone. So it allows you to defend yourself, and you don't necessarily need exact aim, because in a situation where even a sighted person needs to defend themselves, they're not going to have exact aim. You're not going to be able to spray it directly in someone's face and defend yourself. So it's the same for someone who's visually challenged. You're going to spray it in S or Z formation in the face and head area of someone who is possibly bothering you. So basically, just spray and get out of the situation. So either of those safety products work well. Once again, you must have some kind of advanced training, you must have practice, and you must have the knowledge of how to use the product properly. So definitely it's an option.
Now talk more about pepper spray. How does it work and what are its effects on criminals?
Okay, pepper spray is a natural product. It's cayenne pepper. Same thing you can find in your kitchen, natural product. So if you've ever been sprayed by pepper spray or you ever get sprayed by pepper spray, even accidentally, you need to know exactly what's going to happen. It's going to make your eyes swell and close. You can't keep them open, and they water. It's going to swell the mucous membrane, so you're going to be coughing and gasping for air. The effect of pepper spray lasts anywhere from 30 to 40 minutes. If you accidentally spray yourself, then the effect, then all you need to do is to splash cold water on your face and get fresh air, just a fan or something, and wait for the burning to stop. So it's not going to kill you, but it will stop. It will slow you down, and it will definitely slow a would-be predator down. So there are no lasting effects, and there's no damage. So I like pepper spray because it physically stops someone. That's my so-called weapon of choice.
How can the blind properly use pepper spray so that they don't get any in their eyes?
First and foremost is the same thing I tell sighted people as well, is to test it first. You need to know how to use it. So that means you need to know which end the spray comes from. You need to know exactly where it comes out and how it comes out. So what I tell everyone is to you need to go outside and you need to hold it low and you need to know which direction the spray comes from, and that allows you to go outside and point it and make sure it's going to spray. And you can tell when there's something coming out, and you can tell when it's an empty canister. So I can't say it enough to everyone, sighted and otherwise, it's the practice. So just, you know, make sure you know which direction. And I have a little secret how I remember which way to spray it, even though it happened to be sighted. I know on my case that the little round button is where my thumb goes. So if my thumb goes there, I know it's pointed in the right direction. So it can be pointed, and it can be sprayed. So just little secrets like that. I take the time to educate my customers and make sure before they walk away from me that they know exactly how to utilize their products, whether it's an alarm or the pepper spray. So my job is not complete until everyone knows how to use it and that they are aware that they need to test.
Some folks in our listening audience might be wondering about self-defense training. The Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco, I know, is one organization that offers self-defense classes.
Uh-huh.
They teach the blind and visually impaired how to become more aware of their surroundings. For our listeners, what are some of the other techniques that are taught in these self-defense classes?
I do firmly believe that whatever tools you can get, wherever you can get them, you can definitely utilize them. If you take a self-defense class, you definitely need to take more than one class. A lot of times people get excited when they see a self-defense class and they decide they're going to take it, and they do that one class, they learn some moves, and they think they're done. That's not accurate. You need to take it, and you need to continue taking the classes until you have a comfort level. So it's not a one-time deal.
And I would say that's probably the biggest mistake a lot of people make. So definitely taking more than one class and taking it very seriously is key there.
And so when it comes to the danger of natural disasters, earthquakes, fires, floods, what other tips do you have? I know you talked about the safety plan, but what other tips do you have for the blind and visually impaired to protect themselves from these disasters?
First and foremost is education. That's probably my ongoing theme, is to make sure you're educated about any possible dangers, whether it's a personal safety, home security, as well as national or natural disasters. So you definitely need to be educated as to the process, you know, what happens in any given situation. So and I can't stress this enough, and it seems so simplistic, but a weather radio should be required for every home. So having a weather radio, and not just any weather radio, but one that has the NOAA still, and that's the National Oceanographic, oh gosh, I can't say all the words, but you need to look for NOAA, and not only should it be a weather radio that lets you know that there that you can turn on for weather emergencies, but it needs to also have the alert. And that means when the radio is in the position, the alert position, once you have it on, if there are any natural disasters or emergencies, your radio is going to come on automatically. So you don't have to turn it on. It will automatically alert you that there is an emergency situation. And you need to pay attention to the radius. Some of those have radiuses up to 50 miles. So that lets you know when there is an emergency within a 50-mile radius that is coming your way. Gives you plenty of time to take cover or take shelter and prepare. And then also people need to have an emergency kit. And those are just basic things. And I say, and I think I talked about this at the convention, that you need to be prepared for anything. You need to have your medicine in your kit. You need to have any prescription medicine, maybe a couple of days' supplies. When we think about natural disasters, we think about what happened in Joplin, and a lot of people were stuck in their houses, and you couldn't get to your phones, you couldn't get to your medications, and any other safety supply, you couldn't get to any food or any rations. So a emergency kit is definitely important. You need to have emergency phone numbers where you can actually access them. So if they're typically stored in your phone and you don't have your phone close by, you're not going to be able to call for help, you know, call friends and relatives. And another thing you need to do is to have a contact, like a tree, in place. You need to make sure in emergency situations that you have a check-in, that you can call and check in with certain people, and that they know where you are, and that you can check in. If you have an elderly neighbor, or if you're disabled, or someone that you know is disabled, you need to be able to know that they're okay, and you need to know where they would go in an emergency situation. So those are key things that we often don't think about until there's an emergency. So once again, having a plan in place is key.
And definitely to add to that, also television stations and cable networks like the Weather Channel are also good sources to even look to, because they have those alert tones that go off. And of course, anybody who's visually impaired who can actually watch what's on the television screen can see the scrolling ticker that says flood warning, tornado warning, and it tells you what to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And a lot of times, I know this has been a big deal, that those warnings go across the screen. And what about people who can't see the warnings? That's when you need to educate yourself about the tones and everything. And you need to know, you know, what it means. And if you have a weather radio, that can only provide backup. And that way it will let you know what the specific emergency is. So you're not wondering, is it a tornado? Is it hurricane or flooding? You'll know exactly what it is so that you can plan accordingly.
Great. Now, you were talking about classes. I've heard there are several classes about general safety and crime prevention held by local police and fire departments, especially in California, for the general public. Are there any similar courses out there for the blind and visually impaired? What I'm speaking of are the crime prevention and just general safety, those two.
Right. One thing that you can do is you can contact your police department's crime prevention unit. A lot of times the crime prevention officers will do programs in the community. Something that you need to be very careful of is that they need to tailor the program for the audience. One size doesn't fit all. And that's when I do programs for seniors, for people with different disabilities. They need to speak exactly how we need to meet people where they are. So that's why if you have a police officer come and talk, they need to know in advance, here are our concerns. I'm not able to see you, or I can't hear, I can't get around, and they need to address it specifically for you. That's one of the benefits that I have found. I tailor my program specifically for my audience. So people, I talk directly to them, and I meet them basically where they live. I'm not going to give you general safety tips because that doesn't fit any specific market. So and that's a concern because a lot of people say, well, I can talk about safety, and they don't have a clue. And I get a lot of that. You know, people call the police department just to talk to real estate agents, and they've not walked in those shoes, and they have no idea. So make sure any safety program that you find, even self-defense programs, make sure that they're actually catered for who you're talking to.
Let's now talk about your seminars on safety more. What upcoming events do you have set up for the blind and visually impaired?
I don't have any scheduled right now, but that could change any moment. Whenever someone calls and says, Tracy, we need a speaker, I get to work. I talk to them about some of the concerns and needs of their organization. You know, has something happened to someone in the group that I need to make sure to address? Are there any specific ongoing concerns? So my job is to make sure I'm giving my my audience what they need and not, again, not just the general information that doesn't fit them. So I just got back from Oklahoma. I did a program for real estate agents. I did in Kansas a safety program for home health workers. So it just depends on who I am speaking to, and it depends on when I get the call.
So how can listeners contact you if they have any safety or security questions?
Okay, my phone number is 816-372-0939. Email is great. My email address is safetyandsecurityforce@gmail.com. And I'll say it again, it's safetyandsecurityforce, just with an S like Sam, OURCE@gmail.com. And I take my show on the road. So if someone calls and said, hey, we're in Iowa, we need a program, or we're in California, can you come speak? This is what I do for a living. So I will definitely provide an outline with the topics that will be covered, customize it to the client. And one of the components of my program is I do a product education. So I am going to talk about the different products on the market. I'm going to demonstrate them as part of the program. And then when the program is over, I stay around and I answer questions. And I work with people one-on-one where I make sure they get to hold the product, see the product, and tell them how it works. And I am assured that they are going to practice it when they go home. And they need to know that I'm available to answer questions as well.
Tracy, you provided very important information for our listeners when it comes to keeping themselves safe. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Brian. I look forward to hearing from people and helping people stay safe.
That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening. And remember to speak out. See me.